This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
As we expected, with the trade deadline coming at 6 p.m. Eastern, there could be action. And it turns out that we got one of the biggest trades in trade deadline history. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course on your smart speakers. Braden Gall, Jason Fitz in for the guys. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And the big news we thought we might get today would be a Juan Soto trade, but nobody was quite sure what it would look like, how it would go down, and if this was all just posturing and trying to find value, or if instead this was an actual move in the making. And now we have that answer, as Soto has been traded along with Josh Bell to the Padres, the Nationals getting five prospects back in return. And this, Braden, is an aggressive move by San Diego to essentially say, hey, there is more than one baseball team in California that's willing to spend whatever it takes to be part of the World Series conversation. This is not just a Dodger state. Instead, San Diego comes out and says, we intend to put ourselves in a position to contend this year and for the next several.
Yeah, it's not just a present move. It's a future move as well, as a 23-year-old who's got under contract for 2 years and has a chance to make, I guess, more than $440 million. I guess you make the trade knowing that he's already said no to that amount of money, which is incredible, just to say that sentence out loud, Fitzy. But I think it's good for the race. I think it's good for the game. You're 12 games back. You're not going to win the division against the Dodgers right now. But what you've done is you've made yourself a much more formidable playoff team once you get as a wild card team once you get into the playoffs. And if you're a Dodgers fan, if you're a Mets fan, if you're a Braves fan, the defending champs, if you're a Cardinals fan, some other moves could happen today with all those other teams, but you now have a much bigger piece to contend with with the Padres. And you know, also, at the same time, getting better for the next 5 to 7 years if you can get him re-signed. So it seems like a heck of a move. Oh, by the way, you add Josh Bell as well to first base. You got to figure out what to do with Eric Hosmer in the process, but that lineup just got a lot younger and a lot better, and in a National League where certainly the Dodgers are the team to beat, you've got a couple other teams to contend with. They just became a lot more interesting in the West and in the National League pennant race.
Well, and this fills some very specific holes. I mean, if you look at right field for the Padres, they've gotten 3 home runs all season. So I would say that this is an upgrade. And also, they're going to be able to play with Josh Bell however they want to. They'll have to make a decision depending on how the rest of the day plays out, whether that's a DH or whether he's a first baseman. But they'll be able to get more production. And you start talking about what people think of it, what Vegas thinks of it. I'm looking here, according to our great stats and information group, Juan Soto moved from 50-1 to 30-1 to win the NL MVP after this. So there's an expectation, especially for a team that, by the way, in the Padres, is still going to face the Nationals 7 times this month. Like, you start thinking about familiarity. Like, there's just a lot that sort of stacks up that makes this look like a very smart move for San Diego, above and beyond just the fact that we all know that this was the best player that was going to be available. It just, everything is moving because of it.
And talk about pouring the salt in the wound, right? You're a last-place team, 30 games under 500, and now you've traded all the best players from your World Series team in 2019, and now you have to face them again 7 times. Like, that's just pouring salt in the wound if you're a Nationals fan. And unfortunately, if you're a Nationals fan, like, this is one of those times in sports where you look at an organization that did such a good job to build such a young, talented core, to have almost all of them now gone. You know, Bryce Harper, Max Scherzer, Steven Strauss. Like, you just look at the list of people. Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, like, a lot of those guys brought a World Series ring to Washington, and now you've got to trade away a 23-year-old. That's got to hurt for a lot of fan bases, especially the younger fans in terms of D.C. area.
Yeah, well, you think about, you know, the concept. We were just having the question of what makes it worth it for Deshaun Watson, right? For most teams, when you have the inevitable sports talk conversation of, you know, how many bad seasons would you trade for one championship, you don't actually want to see that play out. Now, if you're Washington, you're in full rebuild mode, and I don't know that you expected to be there. I mean, the concept of being able to offer a $440 million contract and have somebody say, nah, I'm good. Like, yeah, it shows you that Washington was trying to address this in a way that made sense for them long term. And now, if you're a Nationals fan, really, if you're a baseball fan overall, you're looking at it. And as much as we talk about player agency in the NBA, as somebody that's very pro player agency, I do look at this and say, man, when teams do everything they possibly can and you still don't have a shot to keep the biggest names at the places that develop them, that's just long term. That's hard on the team. That's hard on the brand. That's hard on the loyalty. That's hard on everybody and everything in this process.
And it's significantly worse than if the guy was just like, yeah, I'm not going to re-sign. You know, or if a team is like, yeah, we can't re-sign you. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much worse that they tried really hard.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, if I'm a fan, I'm a 12-year-old kid, and I love Nats baseball, and I'm like, we did everything in our power to try to make this star that I love as a kid so happy, and he just wasn't good enough. The deal wasn't good enough. The location, whatever it is that's in his mind that he says no to that deal. Doesn't that make it so much worse? Like, it feels like that makes it even worse to me.
Yeah, no, it does. 1,000% is, you know, it's just that heartbreaking moment. We were talking during the break and getting a little information here on what Caesars Sportsbook thinks. And, you know, the odds are starting to come in. I don't know what they were before, but I can tell you that now the Padres are the fifth favorite to win the World Series. So they're behind the Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, Mets is where they now rank. And they're the third favorite to win the NL behind the Dodgers, the Mets. So obviously there's a concept that this is going to put them in a much different position moving forward, which is true. This is one of those rare moves where it is genuinely helping you now and in the future. And I really don't care if I'm a Padres fan. I don't care what we had to give up for the future when it comes to prospects, because now you've gotten somebody that's very young that can play for the next, you know, 12, 13, 14 years that you're going to have to pay out the wazoo. But if ownership is willing to do that, and it appears that they are, you've helped yourself now. You've helped yourself in the future. That's a win.
And let's be very clear. This goes for NFL football fan. Like, this is for all sports fans. It ain't your money. It's funny money, man. It's somebody else's money. It's $600 million that somebody else is going to spend to keep Juan Soto in a Padres uniform. If you are a Padres fan, you are celebrating today. You're clinking champagne glasses. You're having a great time because you know you have an opportunity to go out there in the playoffs and make some real and do some real damage. Like you said, now you're the third best team in the National League according to Vegas, and you're the fifth best team in the majors. You've just changed things overnight, and it doesn't just – I know we're repeating ourselves here, but if they can get him re-signed, you've changed your franchise's direction for the next decade. I mean, that's a huge moment for the Padres.
You start talking about efficiency of a player, and you know, when you talk about Soto being one of only three players that are 23 or younger with more walks than strikeouts, I mean – it tells you about the efficiency and what he brings. And, you know, the WAR numbers on him are through the roof also. There just isn't a loss for any team that was going to pick up Juan Soto. There's no doubt about that. The question is, who is going to be aggressive? And now the question becomes, how do you make sure you keep him in the building? Because if you're going to give up your future, you need to make sure that you're at least setting yourself up to make sure that he's part of the building block of what you're going to be doing next. That's such a huge part of this. But frankly, to the point that we started this whole conversation with earlier in the show, the more I think about him ending up in San Diego, the more I think about the fact that I love, as you and I both work a lot in college football, I'm fine with the fact that college football is dominated by three or four teams most years. But man, it's fun when that team from out of nowhere comes out. Like, I want to see a team absolutely shock the world and get the four seed this year, pull off an upset. Like, I'd love to see a team that was ranked in the teens find their way to a national championship. That would be exciting for the sport. So for somebody that doesn't have any vested interest in who wins or loses in baseball, having more teams be great is going to make October more entertaining for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. No, to your first point about the trade and then the re-signing, if you went out and did all of this and you gave up all those pieces and made one of the biggest trades in the history of the game and you didn't feel pretty sure that you were going to be able to re-sign him, I would call that almost malpractice at this point. Like, that, to get him for a year or two just doesn't seem like that's a very smart strategy. So I'm hopeful, if I'm a Padres fan, that is sort of, there's some understanding involved that you can get a deal done with him. And again, conversations with agents take place. So, I think I agree with you in that I like how baseball has done this. I know we think about the big market teams and the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Cardinals sort of dominating the sport. The Giants have dominated the sport for some stretches over the last 20 years. But by and large, baseball has a lot of parity once you get to the playoffs. We've seen the Rays get there. The Astros have won it. We've seen the Royals win it. The Cubs have won it. Cleveland got there. We've seen lots of teams get to the World Series, I feel like, more than you do in the NBA or in hockey even, or certainly in college football.
Yeah, no, and I feel that all the way to my core, because so often Spain and Fitz, which you should listen to 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Monday through Friday on ESPN Radio, is preempted during the playoffs. So I find myself engulfed in all of the, just soaking all of the playoff baseball in, and you're right, it is wildly unpredictable and deserves more credit for it. In the meantime, that's not the only big story we have today. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, Braden Gall, Jason Fitz, for the guys. We also have news with the Miami Dolphins as the investigation has come out from the NFL, and they've ruled that they're taking a first round 2023 draft pick from the Dolphins, a third round 2024 draft pick, and fining owner Stephen Ross $1.5 million for tampering. And to be very clear, they have stated that they don't have any concrete evidence, apparently, of losing games, of tanking. But when it comes to tampering, they did find evidence that the Dolphins engaged with Tom Brady when he was still under contract with the Patriots and then with the Buccaneers. And they did the same with Sean Payton when he was still coach of the New Orleans Saints. So now we're in this weird spot because that you knew we were going to see some sort of a response, right? Like, there's no way that everybody's going to step back and be like, oh, well, the tanking just didn't happen.
No, and Flores put out a statement basically saying how disappointed he was to learn that the investigator minimized Mr. Ross's offers and pressure to tank games, especially when I wrote and submitted a letter at the time to Dolphins executives documenting my serious concerns regarding this subject at the time, which the investigator has in her possession. Listen, I don't know how, like, I want to protect the integrity of the game. I think we all do. It's weird to do it with the backdrop of the Deshaun Watson situation and conversation happening at the same exact time while we're waiting for an update at 9 a.m. on Thursday for the NFL to do something. It feels very weird for them to be happening at the same time, but they are separate issues. I just don't know how you stop tampering from happening, like, in a human way, like, in a logistical, feasible way. Like, how do you stop two humans that worked in the same organization from like trading text messages? Hey man, like, what'd you think about this? Or hey, what'd you think about that? Or would you like to do this? Like, I don't know how you stop people or prove that somebody was or wasn't doing that. Like, that to me is, it's almost impossible to stop tampering in like the traditional sense of just communicating and just having a conversation.
Well, and you know me, I am far from a conspiracy theorist. It's just wild to think that they found documentation of everything, but not of the tanking. Right. We're going to get some insight on all of this and what's going on right now from one of our favorites, ESPN senior NFL insider, Adam Schefter. Shefty, as always, appreciate your time, my friend. The Dolphins news broke today, and Flores has put out his statement reacting to it. Were we already aware? I wasn't aware. Did I miss this? Were we already aware that it had been documented in writing to the organization by the coach of his accusations?
Say that again, Jason. It had been documented that of his accusations. Well, everybody knew.
So he had presented all of that in writing to the organization as it was happening or afterwards is what we can't seem to understand.
Brian Flores, you mean the tanking accusations? They came out in his lawsuit. When he filed his lawsuit, that was the accusation that Stephen Ross tried to incentivize him to lose games to improve his draft position.
Right.
That came out in the law at the time that he filed that.
Gotcha, Adam. I think where we were getting confused is his statement today said he wrote and submitted a letter at the time to Dolphins executives documenting his concerns. We knew it was part of the lawsuit. I wasn't aware that he...
I didn't realize he did that, but yes, it came out in the lawsuit initially that he felt he had evidence that proved that the Dolphins or Stephen Ross incentivized him to try to lose games to improve their draft position.
But the league and their finding did not support that. Is that correct?
Well, the league found that there was conversations, but didn't find anybody corroborated, didn't find the right context, didn't say it didn't happen, but didn't find enough evidence to prove that it did, that it was serious, to essentially make that the focus of the discipline that was handed down today to the Dolphins. When you look at the release, it was more about, in my mind at least clearly, when Roger Goodell says that this is the most egregious violation of tampering between a team and a player and coach under contract, I don't recall ever seeing that in print, and I don't recall a team losing a first and third round draft pick with the owner being suspended and fined $1.5 million for tampering with personnel that's under contract. So, again, the league said that it investigated Brian Flores' claims. It didn't say they weren't true. It just said basically that there was no evidence that that was a significant issue and nobody could corroborate it.
Adam Schefter joining us here, ESPN Senior NFL Insider, ESPN Radio, Barton Hahn, Jason Fitz, Braden Gall, in for the guys. And we know the 9 a.m. deadline for the Deshaun Watson story is obviously going to happen on Thursday. What are those conversations like right now when it comes to what Roger Goodell has to decide what's next for Deshaun Watson?
Well, I think it's a very, very challenging, difficult decision for the NFL for a lot of reasons, because clearly, you know, everybody knows the seriousness of the charges, the significance of them, the effect it had on the victims. The judge, in her decision, wrote that the NFL proved that there was enough evidence that Deshaun Watson engaged in sexual assault, was a danger to the woman that he was around, and compromised the integrity of the game. All those things the judge wrote. So the league, rightfully so, takes that very seriously, and that's why the league asked for a year-long suspension, an indefinite suspension, where he'd have to apply for reinstatement. And the judge essentially said that the NFL proved these things, but issued the six-game suspension because of the precedent of other disciplinary measures enacted against other players for, I guess, comparable offenses to a certain extent. The judge pointed out that these were non-violent sexual assaults, in her opinion, and that was why she didn't feel the need to make it longer based on the punishments the league had doled out to other players. So the league now has to decide, does the league want to go back to being the judge, jury, and executioner, where it came under fire, where it got itself into trouble for many of these decisions that it handed down, where Roger Goodell or his designee would make the decision about Deshaun Watson and his future? Does the league want to do that when Jimmy Haslam is Roger Goodell's boss? When the judge pointed out on page 15 of the brief that owners have not been treated the same way the players have, and that if the league appeals it and it goes to court, you know that the NFLPA is going to drag owners' conduct and behavior into this and make it a central part of the court case, which is going to be embarrassing, I think. Threatens to be embarrassing. And so, does the league want to do that? Or does the league want to back something that's very significant and very serious in today's world? And does the league want to go forward and basically be back to where it was, which it tried to move away from in the new CBA? So I think it's a challenging position for the National Football League to be in, and they're going to have to make a decision that is not easy to make.
With that decision, Adam, I mean, we all say the league needs to make the decision. We presume that's Roger Goodell. Do we have any indication of who he talks to in order to make that decision of whether or not to appeal?
Yeah, of course, all the people around him. I mean, his primary supporters all around him, Larry Ferrazzani, Jeff Pash, Jeff Miller, you know, the people who are around him up there. He's bouncing ideas off the most powerful people in the National Football League. See what they think. Ultimately, he makes the decision. But yeah, of course, like just like a head coach listens to his offense coordinator, defense coordinator, GM, front office executives. Yeah, he's listening to all of them. And by the way, he may be listening to other owners too who weigh in.
But what's interesting, Adam, is that this kind of turns into like which PR crisis do you want to manage the most, right? Like, that's what you're saying. It's either going to be poor behavior by owners or poor behavior by player, and how do we like? It seems like it's straight up a PR management calculation at this point.
And the league is very much about perception and image, and so yeah, again, it's which one do you want to address? Which one matters more to you? Right? Like, and by the way, the NFL didn't make the decision on the suspension. The NFL appointed a judge. And the former federal judge, Sue L. Robinson, made the decision on the suspension. That was not the NFL. You know, all the people yesterday saying the NFL screwed this up. How could they? Well, the NFL screwed up other things, yes. But not how long Deshaun Watson's decision is. The NFL made its case in court. And the judge made that decision, not the NFL.
an important piece of clarity there coming from Adam Schefter. If the league does decide to appeal this, do you have any indication at this point how the Players Association will react to that?
I'm sure they'll take them to court and sue them, saying that they had agreed that Sue L. Robinson would be the independent disciplinary officer. Now the league is taking back the power. And so that's in the CBA, but they'll take them to court and sue them.
Would that put Deshaun Watson on a playing field potentially in week one?
No, I think he's going to be out this first six games no matter what. That's my understanding, that he will be missing time, and we'll see what happens from there.
Shefty, as always, you're the best, my friend. Thanks for all the information. These are wild times. We appreciate you keeping us informed. Stay safe, my friend.
Yeah. Jason Braden, I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much.
It's ESPN senior NFL insider Adam Schefter joining us. It is wild because, again, to the point that the NFLPA could come in and sue, like, I just wonder, are we going to see part of a suspension? And then, like, there are so many still what-ifs that are coming, and we don't even know if they're going to appeal. So as much as we're talking about it for the next 24 hours, until we find out, Thursday at 9 a.m. is the deadline. Until we get to there, we have no idea what to expect. All right, we're going to get you more insight into the Juan Soto trade.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bart and Han.
Spartan Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. And of course, on your smart speaker. Come on now. Braden Gall, Jason Fitz hanging out with you. Major League Baseball trade deadline is 6 p.m. Eastern, so you don't want to go anywhere throughout the course of the day. ESPN Radio and ESPN will have you covered with every major transaction. But the big domino has already fallen as Juan Soto is now a member of the San Diego Padres. They're finalizing all of the details, but we do know that Juan Soto and Josh Bell are headed to San Diego, and Washington is getting five prospects, possibly a player also added to that. So we're going to get some insight from ESPN Major League Baseball reporter Marley Rivera. Marley, always appreciate your time. What was your reaction to the trade news?
I think that it was unsurprising, right, at one point, the fact that, you know, this is something what we expected to happen, and the Padres, you know, this is what AJ Preller tends to do when he wants to pounce, you know, and this is to make his team better, and it's exactly what he did. And the fact, I think the only part is I was not surprised with the haul, because I do believe that all of us knew that a generational talent like Juan Soto would command, right, this kind of trade. But I mean, the Nationals, if there's any good news for Nationals fans, and I know this is very difficult, this is the team that no longer has Max Scherzer and Kyle Schwarber and Anthony Rendon and now Juan Soto, right? Like, this is Trey Turner. Like, just listen to those names, and Bryce Harper. So obviously they are completely disappointed that a talented player like him is gone. But at the same time, the level of talent and major league ready talent, which is the part that's important. You know, these are not only prospects, but also players that have played in the major leagues already. So these are, you know, just really talented rookies that are, maybe they accelerated this whole rebuild that they're, you know, kind of immersed in a little bit by years. So there's a little of a mixed feelings inside that clubhouse. You know, some guys are really sad, right? Of course, because Juan Soto is Juan Soto. But then the other side, there's a level of excitement, because the level of talent that the Nationals got is really impressive. But you don't convince fans with, you know, with future talent. What they want to do is win now.
Which is what the Padres are trying to do, of course. And they move up to third now in the Vegas odds in the National League. They move to fifth in the World Series odds in terms of winning it all. How do you handicap now the National League race with the Mets and the defending champs, the Braves, the Dodgers, now the Padres? How good can they be in the postseason?
I hear you. I think it's wonderful. Like, this is great. But people still have to remember that the Padres are still 10 games south from the Los Angeles Dodgers. Like, so the Padres right now, and let's be very honest, are likely playing for a wild card spot. And then that doesn't mean that they did not get better. That doesn't mean that acquiring Juan Soto wasn't the right thing to do. I believe that if you had the opportunity to acquire Juan Soto, that you should absolutely acquire him with whatever they asked you for. But at the same time, you have to be careful. The Los Angeles Dodgers are still the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's not like the Dodgers got worse, right? And right now we hear our colleagues reporting that maybe Eric Hosmer is headed that way, you know, Eric Hosmer headed to Boston, and, you know, and the Dodgers really improving their own team too now with Joey Gallo, maybe. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen there, but the Padres still have a long way to go, right? Like, that's what we have to be careful. Still have a long way to go. Now, bringing someone like Juan Soto and a 1-2-3 Dominican punch that they have now, if they get Tatis Jr. back, and when you're talking about Machado, Soto and Tatis Jr. is spectacular, but you still have to get through the NL West and you still have to get past the Dodgers. So I don't know that I'll be crowning the San Diego Padres yet, but they made their team so much better and not only competitive this year with a possible World Series run, but also next year and years to come.
You just mentioned, by the way, we're talking to Marley Rivera, ESPN Major League Baseball reporter. You just mentioned the Dodgers. Jeff Passan reporting Joey Gallo to the Dodgers. What difference is that going to make for them?
Well, it's really good defense, right? We know that one of the most cavernous and really difficult outfields at times can be Dodger Stadium. And Joey Gallo, while his offensive numbers are really just awful, let's just be very honest, in New York, he's a spectacular glove. And that is something that is going to be very welcome to the Dodgers. And we've talked about this before. We know how difficult it has been for Joey Gallo. And then it's not, you know, that he couldn't handle New York and so on. But the point is that it is difficult to come to New York and succeed under the level of booze that Joey Gallo and Giancarlo Stanton have handled, right? Like, it's not, you know, you're still a human being. These are things that you're still going to hear, no matter how much of a spectacular athlete you are. So it was a difficult time for him there. But with the Dodgers, it could be a great new scene. And I do think that he's going to be a major contributor, given the fact also that it's a lefty bat. So that's going to be interesting to see Joey in that lineup, making it more dangerous. And you know what? Joey Gallo may strike out a lot, and he may be, you know, in the interstate, which we know right now with his numbers and his hitting average. But Joey Gallo still commands a lot of respect.
Marley, Jacob DeGrom returns tonight for the New York Mets. They still could obviously make another move as well before the deadline at 6 p.m. Do you expect anything from them? And as a lifelong diehard Mets fan, should I wait to watch the team until DeGrom gets hurt again? Or what should I do? What strategy should I deploy tonight?
Well, I think that you know very well, and I don't have to tell you, I have a lot of Mets fans in my life. You guys really know how to deal with this. I think the most important start for Jacob DeGrom is not today. You know when it is? 5 days from now. That's really what matters. What are the Mets going to get? Because we know at this point that Jacob DeGrom has not been, right, a durable pitcher for the Yankees. I'm so sorry, for the Mets. Look at that. He has not been a durable pitcher, which means, you know, they don't know what they're going to get. They don't know how many starts they can get from DeGrom the rest of the year. He has time to make 10 starts, but what is it that is going to happen? And you know more than anyone, and all you Mets fans know, that it's been very difficult to sit back and see a Cy Young ace of that level, you know, top pitcher in the game, get hurt frequently and not really give you innings out there. And it doesn't matter. When you go out to Mets fans and you go to any fan in the world, that you tell them how great your team is if the team is on the IL. So it doesn't matter that you have a great team on the IL. It really doesn't. So it is about what Jacob DeGrom can do 5 days from now, if they're going to keep him right in 5 days full rest, or if he's going to go into a five-day rotation, and we'll see what happens. And then in terms of changes, of course, I mean, the Mets are still looking for some catching help. It seems that Contreras is going to be very, very expensive, but they're still having conversations, having some competition now, right now, from other teams, of course, in terms of catcher. And they could really, of course, maybe use another bat. So we'll see what happens there. But it's going to be interesting to watch. And I would say, I don't know. Just watch cautiously tonight, and at least you'll recognize that Nelson Cruz will be at the plate. So at least you'll know one really fantastic hitter that Jacob deGrom can test himself against. But then again, it's really early. So we'll see what happens before 6 p.m. Eastern time.
I'm just saying, Marley, you said watch cautiously. That should be put on Braden's tombstone. I watch cautiously. Marley, we appreciate your expertise so much, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
No, thank you so much for having me. And just remember, you know, you have a lot of solidarity in New York. It's going to be fine. And we just really, truly hope that we see Jake out there for many innings to come for all you guys, Mets fans.
Oh, that's spectacular work by her. By the way, don't forget to check out the Padres and Dodgers. That's Sunday from Los Angeles, I should say, on Sunday Night Baseball this weekend. 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN on the television side. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get a business insurance quote online in as little as 6 minutes. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com. We got trades. Braden's got anxiety. We'll tell you about all of it next. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. Braden Gall, Jason Fitz, in for the guys.
Bart and Hahn.
Braden Gall, Jason Fitz, in for the guys. All right, there's a moment here where I feel for you, Braden, because you're a Yankees fan, but you're a Yankee. You're a Mets fan. Sorry,
That's the worst insult you've ever levied at me.
You're welcome. You're not superstitious. You're just a little stitious, right? So, this whole watch, don't watch. I feel your pain all the way to its core.
Minor stitious is what I am here. It's the way you talk about, and I've always admired this about you, your love of your beloved Raiders and how you talk about them. And it's like I can separate myself from every single sports team in every single sport on the planet except for the New York Mets. I can't do it. I cannot be objective. I cannot look at them and think that they're going to win a stinking thing. I see them in first place, and I don't want to watch because I'm afraid that as soon as I start watching, Jacob deGrom's arm is going to fall off. So I'm like, I'm worried so badly that I don't even get to enjoy it anymore, Fitzy. That's how troubled I am with all of this. And again, this is not something somebody chooses. My father, this is a burden bestowed upon you by your father to carry for the rest of your life on your back as a Mets fan. And so when I hear about them spending a bunch of prospects and trying to go get Wilson Contreras, who's a nice player, I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it because you're not going to win the World Series. Somebody's going to get hurt. Chase Utley's going to break somebody's hand and something terrible is going to happen and you're going to get kicked out of the playoffs way too early. Don't go spend any more on the deadline today. That's all I can say.
This is how you know you've gone through the years of damage that comes with fandom of a team that lets you down. Because we all go through this. I remember when the Raiders finally got good in the early 2000s for that couple of seasons there, the number of times I would find myself saying maybe I'm not, if they'd have a bad game when I watch, suddenly it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't watch. Maybe I should tape delay it. Maybe I should watch it later. The amount of factors that go into this, when you are used to your team letting you down, the craziest part about it is that you will navigate whatever thing must be in the universe that is creating that letdown. Right. And it doesn't make any sense. I'm a grown ass man. I know that my Tuesdays should not be ruined by whether or not the Raiders won or lost on Sunday. I can't help the fact that that it is. So it's just part of the burden of the beast of fandom.
Mets fans, I am sorry. If I watch tonight and something happens to Jacob deGrom, it is my fault. I am fully convinced that it is my fault if something happens. So I'm not going to watch. I am doing you a favor, Mets fans. I will not watch the game tonight in order to ensure that Jacob deGrom has a nice start back.
This is one of the wildest things ever for non-fans to understand, and every mega fan knows it. When you're like, I won't watch just because of my fandom is so big. And it's like, so you're a fan of something that you won't watch. Okay, you think that's hot. You should wait to hear what Braden's about to tell you about New York and what team they really love.
Bart and Hahn.
Oh, Yankees fans might be celebrating a little bit right now. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers, presented by Progressive Insurance. Braden Gall, Jason Fitz, in for the guys. Can't wait, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts, your professional parts people. I didn't do that well enough. Can't wait! The Yankees can't wait to see life after Joey Gallo. He gone! Jeff Passer reporting that the Yankees have traded him to the Dodgers. And look, I'm laughing about this, Braden, but also let me be, there's a moment here where obviously this is a player that got in his own head. It's been a contentious relationship between the fan base and him because he had high expectations. He has not met those expectations. He has 20 singles and 12 homers, more singles than homers throughout this this process, hitting 159, 12 home runs, 24 RBI. I mean, everything's gone wrong. I will say this one thing. I have a buddy that years ago played for the Blue Jays. days. And I remember him telling me about sort of the mental aspect of playing baseball and how weird it was to go out in front of the home audience and just get booed mercilessly when you were having a rough stretch. And at the time I was touring, and he said, imagine if you went out to a concert where everybody paid money to come see you play the fiddle that night, and you walked out, and before you'd even started your solo, 30,000, 40,000 people just start booing you at the top of your lungs. Now go play the best solo of your life. I think some people are natured to handle that. Some people simply aren't. And there's going to be a spot where you get in your own head with it, and you're like, yeah, I got to get out of here. My hope for Gallo is that a new scenery for him is good for the Dodgers, and also that for the human being side of it. And that Yankees fans, like, I hope this is one of those amicable splits where everybody looks back a few years later and they're like, we're better people because of it.
The Yankees fans are going to be amicable about something? That's hilarious, Fitzy. Was this a former University of Tennessee volunteer, by the way?
Yes, it was, actually, yes.
I completely agree. I think that while you look at the Dodgers adding the glove, let's say, we can look at it from like an analytical standpoint, right? Like, here's why you make the trade. He struggled in New York. He still has some value to the Dodgers. This is why you make the move, blah, 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 blah. But I think, to your point, I think the most important thing is that, and we see this with quarterbacks sometimes in the NFL, where like you just need a new place. you just need a new home and a new place and a fresh start, because sometimes you need to clear your brain of some stuff and get back to work and like sort of refine yourself. And I think, New York, like Philly, there's certain places where it's just not a good place to be going through that type of thing, because they have expectations. That's the bottom line. That there are expectations when you play for the New York Yankees. Full stop. If you play football for the Eagles, there are expectations, right? Like, they're Dallas Cowboys. There's just certain places where the pressure is just greater. And sometimes you just need to be clear of that to sort of refine yourself. And playing for the Yankees is not an easy thing to do. It never has been. It never will be.
Well, and to that point, you know, oftentimes I tell people, imagine sitting down at your desk and you're not really great. You're having a rough patch. You're not making great spreadsheets. So all of a sudden, everybody's just standing outside your desk telling you, boo, you suck, while you're trying to make your spreadsheets. That being said, as I say that out loud, they would do that to you in New York. Like, you know, somebody would remind you that you're bad at it. So, like, I think, you know, that's just part of the culture there, where in L.A. it's going to be wildly different culture. Eric Hosmer, by the way, speaking of trades, has been traded to the Red Sox. We figured when he turned down the opportunity to be part of the Soto trade, he was going somewhere. But the Padres will be paying down a significant portion. We don't know the amount, but a significant portion of the $44 million left on his contract. So you'll get more updates with the trade deadline tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern. Baseball Tonight trade deadline special will be at ESPN starting at 4 p.m. Eastern, so you don't want to miss that. But there is some opportunity, sometime to your point, Braden, that people just want to go from one city to the other and have the opportunity to rebuild. That being said, for all this, I got to make sure that you get this conversation in, because you're a Mets fan, and you blew my mind earlier when you had a bold statement about what team makes the city tick.
This is an unequivocal fact.
Okay. All right?
This is not debatable. This is not an opinion. New York City is a National League town. All right?
Okay.
National League town. The New York Yankees are the biggest, most powerful, most successful brand in the history of baseball. There is no arguing that fact either. But when they win or lose, the city doesn't change nearly as much as when the Mets are good, because they are mostly awful all the time and disappointing, and have created so much heartbreak and anguish in my life. I understand, but when they are great, the blue-collar people of New York City come out of the woodwork and they celebrate once every 35 years. Yankees fans are just good all the time. They don't know what it's like to suffer as long as the Mets do. National League town, baby. New York City, National League town. At me, at Braden Gall on Twitter. I'll defend my honor until Jacob DeGrom's arm falls off tonight.
Please, at him and not me on that one. But I do hear some of your logic. Like, it's one of the things we see in college football, right? Like, sometimes when you go down and you watch a Bama game, it just doesn't seem like the city's fired up. Even if it's a big SEC matchup, like, sometimes they're fired up, sometimes they're not, because they're so used to a certain level of excellence that, you know, it doesn't resonate the same way. If you were a part of, like, last year's Cincinnati run to the college football playoff, part of what made it special was the whole city was just enamored with, oh my God, we finally did it. We cracked the code.
Yeah, go with the Bengals.
Bengals are a great example. Yeah, I specifically didn't go to the Raiders-Bengals playoff game because it was like, this is going to be incredibly cold. I'm going to freeze my no-nos off, and I'm going to be surrounded by 65,000 screaming Cincinnati fans that haven't seen a home playoff game since I was a little kid, and they're going to be angry. Like, there was no good win for me out out of that.
Now, let me be very clear. I am in Nashville, Tennessee, but I grew up in the Northeast for a couple of years. My brothers lived there for 10 years. My dad grew up in the city in the late 60s with the 69 Amazing Mets and Willis Reed in 73. Like, don't question my bona fides here. But what I will say is that the Yankees are so good all the time that it doesn't change the way the vibes are feeling through the city. When the Mets are great, it feels different walking around National League town, New York City. You heard it here first, folks.
There's only one thing I'm 100% certain of. No other show on ESPN Radio today is going to use no-nos and bona fides in the same segment. That is the one thing I can be certain of. Again, it's been a wild day, and it's not ending. There are still hours to go on the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Obviously, moves still to be made as contenders try and figure out how to pick it up and get to the next level. So you want to make sure that you stay tuned to ESPN Radio. Remember, the Baseball Tonight trade deadline special on ESPN starts in minutes, or an hour in minutes, I guess, 4 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, Kenny and Carla coming up next. Thanks for hanging out with Braden and I.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio, or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.